Reno nodded, although he wasn't positive he agreed with his superior in this case. Nicholas Stanton, the Archbishop of Hanke, was Clinton's mole within the group of reform-minded vicars who called themselves the Circle. In fact, it was Stanton who'd first revealed the Circle's existence to the Grand Inquisitor. It seemed obvious to Reno that the other members of the Circle, or its leadership at least, must realize one of their number had betrayed them, although they obviously didn't know who. Personally, Reno was at least half inclined to stake Stanton out. There were a couple of members of the Circle, Howard Wilson came to mind, who Reno rather suspected would come out into the open to cut Stanton's throat. It wouldn't save them in the end, but they'd probably take a certain satisfaction out of it anyway. And when they did, it would be conclusive proof of their own guilt, which could be readily displayed for the remainder of the vicarate. It would be a bit hard on Stanton, but his value would disappear anyway the moment the Circle was broken. In Reno's opinion, he'd be far more useful at that point as a martyr, whose death would have underscored the Circle's treason. And if it didn't underscore that treason, Stanton would be no great loss anyway. As far as the renegades realizing Clinton was simply biding his time before having them arrested, Reno was certain they must have already recognized what was coming. At least one vicar, who'd been a member of the Circle for over 10 years, according to Stanton, had committed suicide the month before. Two more had perished in what looked like accidental deaths, although Reno was confident appearances were deceiving. "No, all three of them killed themselves," he thought again. "They decided that would be an easier end than the one the Book of Schuller lays down for heretics, and they probably decided it was the only way to keep the Inquisition from going after the remaining members of their families as well." He didn't know if they'd been right about that last point or not. That would be Clinton's decision, and while the Grand Inquisitor's first inclination would undoubtedly be to make examples out of the traitors' families as well, he might choose not to. If he held his hand in that regard, it might encourage future enemies to take the same escape, remove themselves from the vicar's path, without putting him to the bother of having them removed. It would be interesting to see which approach Clinton chose in the end. "And for now," Reno thought dispassionately, "he's enjoying the knowledge that the others have realized what's coming. It's not as if they could get far in the coldest month of a Zion winter even if they tried to run, and in the meantime, they have to see him every day and know what's going to happen to them. And so does everyone else in the vicarate, whether they're willing to admit it or not." That was the real reason Clinton had waited so long, Reno was certain. It wasn't something the Grand Inquisitor was going to discuss in detail even with him, but Reno hadn't served Clinton so long and so well without realizing how the vicar thought. Clinton had deliberately stoked the steadily growing fear within the vicarate, but not out of simple sadism, or even out of a simple desire to punish those who dared to challenge the Group of Four's control. No. He'd used the gnawing terror to hone the internal, factional tensions which always afflicted the temple during the winter months to an even sharper, more dangerous edge. He'd wanted to force decisions, to drive even those who'd traditionally attempted to stand aloof from the vicarate's internal political struggles to choose sides, to commit themselves. And he'd wanted them to do it under circumstances he controlled. His own command of the Inquisition and Elaine Maguire's command of the Temple Guard gave the Group of Four an absolute monopoly on force within the Temple and Zion, and the winter had trapped all of Mother Church's highest hierarchy right here. There was, quite literally, no countervailing force, which meant everyone knew Clinton was in a position to bring the full sledgehammer repressive power of his office down on anyone who marked himself out as the Group of Four's enemy. In the face of that sort of threat, it was scarcely surprising that even many who nursed serious doubts as to the Group of Four's handling of the crisis had found themselves looking for ways to prove their loyalty, to curry favor like a frightened dog, licking the hand which threatened to beat it in the hope of buying some sort of mercy, or at least of securing short-term survival, because even the dimmest dullard had to recognize that without short-term survival, there could be no long-term survival. No doubt it did amuse Clinton to use enemies and rivals to serve his own political ends. In fact, Reno never doubted it did, and he supposed the streak of cruelty, even sadism, that demonstrated was a serious flaw. Yet he'd come to the conclusion long ago that all men had flaws, and that the greater the man, the greater the flaw tended to be. And the fact that Clinton enjoyed making his enemies suffer made his strategy no less effective. Besides, it wasn't as if any other strategy had ever truly been possible, for there could be no rapprochement between Samuel Wilson and Jaspar Clinton. It simply couldn't happen, if for no other reason because Clinton would expect other potential adversaries to see it as an act of weakness on his own part, as an accommodation he'd sought, because he doubted the strength of his iron fist. It was essential he prove he entertained no such doubt, and that he would not tolerate that doubt's existence in any other vicar's mind.